We're going to continue our study of the life of Joseph, where we left off last week, and we'll go as far as we can and no further. Genesis 37, verses 3 and 4. Now Israel, remember who Israel is, that's Jacob, prince with God. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Now by this act of giving Joseph a special coat, Jacob intended for Joseph to be the chief of the family as firstborn of Rachel. Remember, Joseph was the firstborn of Jacob's chosen wife. So he gives Joseph a coat which advertises that, which gives him the position as the chief of the family. So the coat singled out Joseph as the one son that had been designated to rule the family and to whom the larger part of the wealth would be given. This was obvious to the other boys. This was not hidden from them. And it elicited in these boys hatred. Not a yielding to the father's will, but a rebellion against the father's will. Now it was a coat with long sleeves extending down to the ankles, and it indicated authority and stature. It was a garment suited to supervision. We talked about this last week. There are clothes suited to supervision, and there are clothes not suited to supervision. Now, when I go out and I was at my son's house laying brick yesterday. I've laid a lot of brick in my life, and somehow I got hoodwinked into this task. It's going to take about 7 Saturdays. Now, I did not wear my coat and my tie and my good clothes to do that, which I do each day as I supervise for the Navy. So my garment was suited to my work. This coat was not suited to getting his hands dirty. So by this garment, Jacob proclaimed that Joseph was his chosen son. That coat was as if Jacob had said, "This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." That was what was proclaimed to the other sons. So by this distinction, Joseph was identified by his brothers as in the camp of the enemy and one to be hated. That's the kind of boys they were. You see, that could have revealed in the sons, in the brothers, a yielding attitude, a humble attitude, an acceptance of the father's will, but it revealed the opposite. It revealed hatred by the brothers. For when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, what was the result? They hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. This was a tense situation in this family. Have you ever been in that kind of family where there's bickering in the family and no one can speak peaceably unto each other? Oh, that's not a good place to be. That's a miserable place to be. And there are families all over the country where that takes place. They can't speak peaceably unto each other. Why? Because they've got a wicked heart. See, their heart is not changed by God. So they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. They hated him because of their father's love. Now, it was not based upon anything that Joseph was, but their hatred was based upon their father's love. They hated him so that when they talked to him, they were not able to talk to him in any way peaceably. no peace between them, it's indicated here. Their hatred would not allow them to treat Joseph in any civil manner. You know, that's what should be expected in a home. See, if you have anything otherwise, you've got problems in your home. But people ought to treat each other civilly and peaceably. See, don't let your children be anything that Joseph was, but their hatred was based upon their father's love. They hated him so that when they talked to him, they were not able to talk to him in any way peaceably. No peace between them, it's indicated here. Their hatred would not allow them to treat Joseph in any civil manner. You know, that's what should be expected in a home. See, if you have anything otherwise, you've got problems in your home. But people ought to treat each other civilly and peaceably. See, don't let your children be bickering children. Don't permit it. But in this home, they would not treat Joseph in any civil manner. At least they were united in one thing. They were united against Joseph. Their hatred was so pervasive that in all their dealings with him, no salutation of peace be unto thee would leave their lips. You know, that was important in that culture. Peace be unto you. Shalom. See, that's how they greet. That's how they depart each other. Peace be unto you. That's normal. We say goodbye. Have a nice day. See? Have a good evening. My father used to say, I'm glad I'm home and I wish you were too. When people were leaving. Well, isn't that appropriate? I mean, if people are leaving, the travel is not the enjoyable part. The enjoyable part is getting there. See? I'm glad I'm home and I wish you were too. You think about that, you say, well, that's a nasty thing to say. But in reality, that's a good thing to say. See? Because home is such a wonderful place. And unfortunately, this was not a wonderful place because they would not treat Joseph civilly. The word shalom to Joseph would not come out of their lips. Oh, I hope you have a home where people are civil to each other and they wish peace be unto thee to each other. Oh, a bickering home is a miserable place to live. You know, who wants to go there? But we are here given a glimpse of Christ as we observe Joseph, who was loved by the Father but hated without a cause by his brothers. Doesn't that remind you of Christ? This is what John wrote in chapter 15, verse 25. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. Joseph could have said the same thing. They hated me without a cause. So Joseph, as was Christ, was the instrument that revealed the Father's love and revealed the brother's hatred. Oh, didn't Jesus do that? Jesus came here to reveal the Father's love, but when he revealed the Father's love, he also revealed and exposed the hatred of his brethren. It's amazing what you can do by one act. You can reveal the love of God and at the same time bring out hatred. Try it. So as Jesus Christ was either loved or hated, so too was Joseph loved or hated. Verse 5 through 11, we get into the dreams. Have you had any dreams lately? I don't believe I'm a dreamer. Or if I am a dreamer, they're just kind of pushed down and they never seem to come out, so I never have any dream tales to tell. Have I ever told any dream tales? My wife tells dream tales from time to time. Others say, oh, you should hear this dream that I dreamed last night. Oh, please don't spare me the details. You know, here, was it a long dream? Well, if it's a short dream, I'll listen. But if it's a long dream, please keep it to yourself. But Joseph didn't, because he was not to keep it to himself. It was not within the providence of God to keep it to himself. It was in the plan of God for him to tell these dreams to his brothers, because it exposed their hatred the more. And Joseph dreamed a dream in verse 5, and he told it his brethren. What was the result? And they hated him yet the more. I never hated anybody for telling me a dream, but they never told me this kind of dream that elevated them and depressed me. And he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed." Their ears perked up. What's this dreamer going to tell us now? What more ammunition is he going to give us so that we can hate him the more? Come on, Joseph, tell us the dream. We're ready with some more hate. "For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose." You know, they don't do that anymore. That's all mechanical. But in those days, they would go through the field with their sickle or their scythe. I think you say it that way. And they would cut the grain. You know, the days when people used to work in the fields, and the patterns that they did in the fields, it was so beautiful. Handwork is so beautiful. Why? Because it's in the image of God. Machine work is not beautiful like handwork is. And they were hand cutting these. And then there would be folks that would gather the grain, and they would bind them in sheaves and stand them up to dry. But Joseph dreamed the dream. We were binding sheaves in the field, and this is all the brothers here. This is 11 brothers. "And lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood round about." They all gathered round about to hear what this sheaf had to say. "And then those sheaves made obeisance to my sheaf." They bowed to Joseph's sheaf. That was obvious what's taking place. "And his brethren said to him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words." A few days later, I don't know, maybe a week or so later, maybe months later, I don't know, it doesn't say. "And he dreamed yet another dream and told it to his brethren and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more." Oh boy, another dream. We heard the first dream and we didn't like it. We hated you more, and yet you're coming to us with another dream. "And he said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying." So Joseph dreamed two dreams which do not need an interpreter of dreams to interpret. You know, in other scriptures, we see dreams that needed an interpreter. Most of your dreams need an interpreter too, don't they? I mean, they're strange. What do they mean? You don't know what they mean. They're strange dreams. Dreams are strange. Most of the time, they need an interpreter who has a weird mind. But these two dreams were clear dreams, needing no interpreter. So unlike the dreams of Pharaoh later in this passage, God intends for these dreams to explain themselves. So Joseph's brothers and his father immediately knew what the dreams meant, and they did not like what appeared as pride on the part of Joseph and the demeaning position in which the dreams placed them. Tell me your dreams, but I hope I'm in a good position in your dreams. See, at least I'll get a little payback for listening. But they didn't like the dreams that Joseph dreamed. Now, Joseph's first dream concerned the harvest field and symbolized the world's resources and wealth. It was an agricultural dream, and it symbolized the world's resources and wealth. We see that all the brothers were participating in the harvest, but the dream showed that Joseph would outdo them all as to his position and power on the earth. That was obvious. That's how they came to their conclusion. Joseph, your dream shows you here, and your dream shows us here, bowing down to you. Oh, we love you, Joseph. No. We hate you, Joseph. We hate you. So it was a dream of the control that Joseph would have over the resources of the world and over his brothers. We know the outcome of that dream, don't we? We know where that dream lived itself out in reality, but the boys didn't know that. They saw this favorite of their father, Jacob. They saw him walking around in this coat of supervision, of authority. And then they hear these dreams which indicate and support all those things, and they hate him the more. It was obvious that the brothers rejected Joseph now, but this dream revealed that in time his brothers would be forced to acknowledge him. Who does that remind you of? Christ. See, this is a precursor of Christ and the Jews. Now, the second dream involved celestial images, the sun, the moon, and stars bowing down to Joseph. But this dream was also a dream of position and power. Just like the first dream, it was a dream of position and power. Now, if we saw the sun and the moon and the stars by itself, it wouldn't be so easy to interpret. But the writer, the dream included 11 stars. Ooh, wow, 11 stars. I wonder who that is. Well, the boys didn't wonder. See, it was obvious that the 11 brothers were meant, and this shows the sun and the moon were part of the family, symbolizing Jacob and Leah. But the first dream was disturbing enough because it included the brothers bowing down to Joseph, but the second dream was more disturbing because it included the 11 brothers plus Jacob and Leah. Not only are the brothers going to bow down to Joseph, but the father and the mother are going to bow down to Joseph. So with Joseph's brothers so open in their hatred, you wonder why Joseph told the second dream to them. Wonder why he didn't keep it to himself. Well, it wasn't in the providence of God to keep it to himself. Perhaps Joseph even told it with some arrogance in an attempt by Joseph to use the dreams to get back at his hateful brothers. I don't know what attitude Joseph had in telling these dreams, but it does say that they hated him the more because of his dreams and his words. What kind of words did he use for them to add hatred to themselves? The first dream said this, "And his brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us?" No way, Joseph. Where do you get such imaginations? Are you going to reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. So were the words that he used to explain this dream imprudent? Don't know. The second dream, "And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this thy dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying." difference between youth and age. Right there. Oh, the brothers were quick to jump to conclusions, and they immediately added to their hatred for Joseph. But Jacob, although he rebuked him, he backed off a little bit, and he started pondering the saying. He started observing the saying. He started thinking about the saying, because he knew the importance of dreams as God communicates with his own. See, Jacob knew of dreams and how God used them to communicate to his chosen vessels, but how these dreams foretell of Christ. You see, although Jesus Christ is hated by the sons of Israel today, there is coming a day when Jesus will be exalted and every knee will bow to him of things in heaven and things on earth and things under the earth. I hope you believe that. As you go through life, that kind of belief and that kind of faith will make you understand that the rebellion that this world has against the Lord will all result in the bowing of the knee to Jesus Christ. See, every knee shall bow. That doesn't just mean getting down on one knee. See, if you get down on one knee, the other knee hasn't bowed. But you'll be on two knees. Every knee. The one-legged man will get on his one knee. Every knee shall bow, it says, and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Then all the resources and all the rulers of the planet will be his to command, as Joseph was in those days of famine and those days of plenty. And Israel, too, will own Jesus Christ as Lord, just as Joseph's brethren finally owned their hated brothers. It's such an interesting story to see the transition of the brothers over this period of years. How their hatred was turned into love for their brother. So God used the telling of the dreams, regardless of whether or not Joseph's motives were pure or impure. I can't judge that. The telling of the dreams added to what drove the brothers to what they were to do with Joseph, but it was simply what was required in order to fulfill the dreams whose message was so deeply hated. It's interesting that the brothers hated the dreams, but they were the instruments to fulfill the dreams. That's interesting. That's ironic, isn't it? Oh, they hated the dreams, and yet God used them as the instruments for the dreams to be fulfilled. God will do that. God will do that. Verse 12 through 14. And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. We don't know how long after this took place. At the beginning of this chapter, Joseph was 17. Events took place. Perhaps Joseph's 18 by now. We don't know. But the boys went to feed their flocks, their father's flocks, in Shechem. Joseph didn't go along. And Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. Which means I'm yielded to your will, Father. I know that Shechem is a long distance, and I'm going to my brothers who hate me. He had all that baggage on his back. He had all that understanding of the hatred of his brothers in his mind, and yet he said, here am I. He yielded to the Father's will. And Jacob said to him, he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brothers. A father is worried about his 11 sons. See, go, I pray thee. I'm praying for you to go. And see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks. He had a double concern here. Not only the concern of his boys, but the concern of his flocks. That's a justifiable concern, isn't it?
Especially for Jewish.
Yeah, that's right. That's his wealth. He's got his wealth out there. And bring me word again. I fully expect you to come back, Joseph, with word. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Now we know where he started from, and we know where he went. He was down in Hebron. When I had the maps out here, you saw that Hebron was to the south, and Shechem was kind of midway in Israel, about 50 or 60 miles north of Hebron. That was quite a journey for a young lad. You know, that's like going, it's like walking, or perhaps he rode, I don't know, but that's like going from here to Mobile. See, how'd you like to walk to Mobile? Well, if you had enough time and you were 17 or 18 years old, that would be a good journey, but it's still a long journey to go. So he heads off to Shechem, about 50 or 60 miles from Hebron, which was the home camp of Jacob and his family. Isaac was still living. Now, we know from later passages that Joseph was placed in a pit that was mentioned as a dry pit. It kind of indicates the drought. Kind of indicates that there was a drought in the land. So we find here that Joseph's brethren have taken the flock to Shechem, a region of a fertile plain. It appears then that there was a drought and that good pasture land is scarce. Therefore, we find Jacob's sons a long distance from home. That's a long distance to take the sheep, isn't it? Well, why did they go there? Well, it appears that there was a drought. The pit was dry, and they wouldn't have mentioned it as a dry pit if it were always dry. But at times during the year, it was not a dry pit. It was a wet pit. But this was a dry pit. The flock was 50 to 60 miles away from home. Most likely there was a drought. So Jacob is concerned about both his sons and his flocks, for most likely they've been gone a considerable time. Now remember Shechem. What do we know about Shechem? Well, what happened at Shechem? Dinah was defiled by Shechem, the son of Hamor. Remember that story? Jacob and his family had lived in Shechem for some time. They became acquainted with the people of Shechem. Dinah went into the city of Shechem, and there she was defiled by the son of Hamor and basically taken. Because we see that the sons of Israel, the sons of Jacob, went into Hamor and rescued her and killed all the men. So that's the past history of where these boys are. I would be concerned too if my sons had gone back to that place. So this was the place where Simeon and Levi killed all the men of Shechem. This was the place where Jacob said this to Simeon and Levi. Ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land. Quite a phrase, isn't it? When they think of me, they think of a stink because of what you've done. A stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. Well, that never happened. But that's a concern that Jacob had when his sons killed all the men of the village, of the city. Now, we don't know how long had passed since this incident. Perhaps 4 or 5 years had passed since this incident, but with the drought and this history to consider, Jacob was properly concerned about his sons and his flocks. So he sends his beloved son, Joseph. And he was concerned enough to appoint Joseph to be the overseer, in spite of the hatred of his sons had for Joseph. In spite of the obvious jealousy of the coat that announced that superiority and the dreams of Joseph which had caused such discord. Over all of that, he sends Joseph. So it must have been a very, very deep concern, don't you think? Perhaps he had thought that his sons, over time, had mellowed. We see that Joseph is willing to go to his brothers, so he says in complete obedience, "Here am I." In spite of the difficulties about the distance and the dangers, Joseph is interested in pleasing his father. There's a lesson for us, isn't it? You say, "Well, Father, I don't think I want to go. I'm afraid of the dangers and the difficulties and the travel and all the things that could happen." No, Joseph had the attitude was, if the Father wants me to do it, it must be a good thing to do. I'll go ahead and do it. You know, a lot of times God calls upon you to do something that you have fear about, and you look at the things that you have to do instead of the one that tells you to do those things. See, Joseph had the attitude that if the Father wants me to go, I must go, in spite of the dangers and the difficulties and the distance. Joseph knew he was hated, but perhaps the difficulties that his brothers were facing would cause them to welcome a messenger from home, even if it was Joseph. Perhaps Jacob had that in his background. They'd been gone a long time. Maybe they'll welcome Joseph. Find out about what's going on at home. A connection with home. See? Perhaps Jacob even said, "Surely they will reverence my son." See? "Surely they will reverence my son." He had that expectation in his heart. But as Christ was sent from the Father, Joseph came unto his own, and his own received him not. Another indicator of Joseph as the type of Christ. So Joseph goes to Shechem. This is an interesting passage here in verse 15 through 17. "And a certain man found him." There's no name of this certain man, but it sure was providential that there was this man there in Shechem to direct Joseph further on. My, you can see the hand of God in this event. "And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field." Joseph was wandering in the field. "Where are my brothers? They were supposed to be here." Remember that Jacob owned property in Shechem. Don't you suppose that Joseph went to that property? That's where most likely he would go, because Jacob owned property in Shechem. "And he was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, 'What are you looking for? I've been observing you,'" perhaps the adjacent farmer or the adjacent shepherd said, "What are you doing? You just seem to be wandering in this field." "And Joseph said, 'I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks.'" Concern. God had placed this man there to direct Joseph further so that Joseph could be sold into slavery. That's the providence of God. "And the man said, 'They are departed hence, for I heard them say..." Interesting, the little threads that connect these events. Little just fine spider-like threads. First of all, the man was there when Joseph came looking, and this same man was there when he overheard. See? Both of these events are just fine threads of time that God had seen to take place. "And the man said, 'They are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan.'" Have you ever gone to Dothan, Phil? It's about 100 miles from here. See? Well, in his case, it was only 12. And it wasn't in Alabama. This is not the Dothan in Alabama, folks. And they said, let us go to Dothan. We say that every once in a while at home. Let us go to Dothan. Well, what's in Dothan? I don't know, but let's go there. And that's what these boys said, and that's what this fellow overheard. They must have said it loud, or he was with them in the campfire. But he said, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. The man was telling the truth. They went to Dothan. Now, Dothan was about 12 miles further to the north and further to the west, just a little bit northwest. So Joseph came to Shechem, where he expected to find his brothers, but they were not there. Providentially, a man was there that had overheard his brothers say that they were going to Dothan. Providentially. How little change in these events could take place in order for Joseph not to go to Egypt. And yet God saw to it that all these things occurred. Now, Dothan lay on an overland route between northern Gilead and the sea road to Egypt. Shechem wasn't the right place for these things to take place. Shechem apparently was not on the route for caravans. See? So, most likely, Dothan was closer to the way of caravans going north and south than was Shechem, and God's plan for Joseph depended upon a caravan of merchantmen heading to Egypt. What made these boys go to Dothan? I don't know. Knowing those boys, there was something they wanted to see in Dothan. See, and they went to Dothan. But Dothan was the right place for these things to take place. If they would have thrown him into a pit in Shechem, there was no caravan coming through Shechem for them to sell him into slavery. So they had to go to Dothan for this to take place. Now, Shechem was also a place where Jacob and his sons were known. See? We saw that Jacob owned property in Shechem. Most likely they had lived there for years. We see that this certain man in the field knew the brothers. See? So Shechem was not a good place to deal with Joseph. Too many people knew, and it couldn't be hidden. So Dothan was probably a place where the cowardly deed of selling Joseph could take place without others reporting this to Jacob. Again, another thread that had to be woven in order for this to all to take place. In other words, God providentially provided for Joseph to be sold as a slave from Dothan so the deception practiced by the brothers would be successful. See the providential hand of God in this story. So all was in place in Dothan for God's covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to take the next step. Had to go to Dothan for all of these things to come about. Now, Joseph could have gone to Shechem, been discouraged, immediately turned around and gone back to Jacob and said, I just couldn't find the boys. Have you ever had your children to do that? Instead of thinking, well, what's the will of the Father? The will of the Father is to find out the situation concerning his sons and his flocks. The will of the Father was not to go to Shechem. That was incidental to the will of the Father. But Joseph had in his heart to fulfill the will of the Father, so he made extra effort to not stop short of his mission and return to Jacob, but instead to go further to Dothan, which reveals Joseph's desire to carry out the will of the Father. He remembers his father's word, go, I pray thee, see whether it is well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. And Jacob was expecting Joseph to do just that, and he patiently waited at home for the word of Joseph, and Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan, fulfilling the will of the Father, doing what the Father expected, and he fully expected to return home with the word that his Father expected. We'll just read verse 18 and 20 and then stop there, pick up next week. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. How do you suppose they saw him afar off? Probably wearing that coat. See, wearing that coat. Here comes Joseph, wearing the coat, the dreamer. See, they hadn't mellowed. They conspired against him to slay him, and they said one to another, "Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him, and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." You see what had been gnawing at them for all this time? His dreams. We'll see what will become of his dreams. We'll stop those dreams from being fulfilled. We'll slay him. Well, it wasn't to be. See, it wasn't to be. All right, we'll stop there and pick up next week, Lord willing, in this passage. Thank you, Father, for your precious word, and thank you for the story of Joseph, which tells us the story of Christ. Help us, Lord, to understand this and to hide it in our hearts. In Jesus' name, amen.